something I don't really think we talked about. I didn't really want to say to him because I had actually mentioned the scoreboard in the third round before the restart, and he looked at me and he goes, "I don't want to talk about the scoreboard right now." And I said, "You got it. Not talking about it again." So, you know, before the final round, I had a number in my brain that I thought, okay, if we can get five, we'll at least have a shot. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, the guy in classic Evan fashion with two holes left goes birdie, birdie. And it was amazing. You know, it was just one of those things where, all right, we got five, let's hold on and see what happens. And that was a pretty wild couple of hours after that, sprinting over to the 18th green to see if Matty Schmid is going to make that birdie putt or not.
Welcome back to Any Given Monday. Valspar, have a great Monday Q story. Kevin Elwin, that you probably just listened to. Now we have Evan Harmeling. Evan was at the Puerto Rico Open, his first pro event in 12 years, or his first PGA Tour event in 12 years, makes the cut, plays great on the weekend, is right on the edge of a top 10 that would have got him into the Valspar. But the story of how we got in is great. It includes tops. It includes a run to the 18th green. It includes bombs made on the last two holes. It's exactly what Monday qualifiers are all about and how a couple of strokes can change a person's career. So without further ado, Evan Harmeling and his caddy, Luke Letty, who adds great insight into their run up the leaderboard on Saturday and Sunday. Any Given Monday, Evan Harmeling.
Guys, let's talk. First of all, how are you guys? Evan, how are you at the Players? You're in the parking lot. This is typical golf life.
Yeah, it is. We're doing great. Thanks for having us.
All right. Luke, how are you?
Doing great. Living the dream.
Awesome. All right, Evan, let's go back to the Monday qualifier. You've played a million across various tours. You are, let me see if I have this right, 8 on 17 and you make triple. Kind of take me back to that hole.
Yeah, I mean, I was absolutely cruising. Really calm, just cruising, eight birdies, no bogeys. And I get to this hole and I hit three wood there in the practice round. I've been hitting kind of like a cut three wood where it doesn't kind of go max distance. And in the practice round, I was like, okay, it's 270 in this bunker, like a cross bunker. So I was like, let's just hit the little three wood. That's the game plan here. So I get there. I'm like, okay, we're going to stick. First thought in my head was like, wow, it's a 400 yard par four. I was like, this is really short. There are a couple holes similar to that earlier in the round. It's like, this is 4 iron, 9 iron. Or 4 iron, 8 iron, maybe. And I was like, you know what? No, we're going to hit three wood. We're going to stick to the script. Like, we're cruising. And then I put the tee in the ground and I hear out of the corner of my head. I saw the other guy I was playing with, corner of my ear. He's like, you know, so 266 to that cross bunker. And I was like, 266. I'm like, what am I doing in three wood? Like, this is way too much club. And so I'm like, okay, go back. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to hit the seven wood. I was like, it's the heaven wood. We got God on our side here.
Yeah.
I was like, we're going to hit the seven wood. Just like, anyway, made kind of a tentative swing there. It just wasn't a seven wood situation with the wind and everything. Made a tentative swing and flared it out. I'm on this cart path on the right. It's like one of the integral parts of the course, like the kind of like the crushed stone cart path.
Sure. Yeah.
Still fine. Like, just like tentative swing, but I'm fine to have a little bit of tree trouble. But I really missed this seven wood. I mean, I hit the thing like 210. I got like 190 in. And so I'm sitting there. And then I'm thinking, I'm like, okay, now I got to think about this. Let's not do something stupid here. And then I'm like, well, I was like, it's like, there hasn't been that much wind today. It's like playing pretty easy. I was like, a lot of people got to be taking it deep. I don't want to play for bogey right now. So So I'm like, I'll just hit a cut 6-iron around this tree. And I knew like 7 wasn't going to quite get to the green. So I was like, I'll hit cut 6. I'm on the cart path. My foot slips out a little bit and I just smother hook this thing. I was supposed to cut it and it was like a, I ripped it and it was like a hot draw. And this thing goes out of bounds by like a couple yards. And then I'm like, good Lord. So then I'm like, okay, now I'll actually hit the 7-iron. Like, who cares if I actually get to the green? Hit the 7-iron just short of the green, which was the conservatively aggressive play. I mean, I could have just chipped it to 100 yards too, and actually like just got a wedge in my hand, but made two tentative putts. And then I get up and it's the hardest drive on the hole. It's a 490-yard par 4, my final hole. And luckily I kind of gathered myself, hit 2 really good shots, 2 putted for par. And luckily that got me into a playoff.
Luke, I want to be fair to Luke here. Luke was not at the Monday qualifier. So I feel like you were taking shrapnel there, Luke, from the listeners, even though you weren't there. So let's clear the area that Luke, his Evan's normal caddy, was not there.
Yeah, was not there. It was actually more concerning when he got through because I was like, wow, I don't think he needs me anymore.
It's like, what happened here?
Yeah, so I mean, I was refreshing the scorecard all day. I was back in Maryland where I'm from, just kind of hanging out with some family, doing that stuff. And you know, I saw he got through. And then when you and I were talking, Ryan, on Twitter, you know, you were kind of my lifeline because when you're refreshing Monday Q scorecards, they're never on time. You're basically like an hour late. So you kind of had let me know what the deal was. But yeah, I was concerned. I was like, well, I think I'm out of a job. Because our last Monday we missed by a couple and you know, that was the case. But yeah, I think we backed up in Puerto Rico. So I think I saved my chances of having a job.
Yeah. Evan, so
my first thought was like Luke would never have let me hit this 6-iron. I called my parents. I was like, yeah, Luke wasn't there. Like he wouldn't let me hit the 6. I was like, it's okay though. We're through.
Exactly.
Let's go to the playoff. Evan, in the playoff is Patrick Flavin, who's kind of like a Monday Q legend, a 15-year-old kid, who's the number, like supposed to be the number one. He is the number one junior in the world. And then Jinju Jang, I think, if I remember right. And like after coming off that triple, knowing you kind of quote unquote shouldn't be in the playoff, Evan, you just got to, I assume, just kind of mentally reset and go like, hey, if you would have told me at the beginning of the day, I'm in a playoff, I would have taken it and kind of wipe away that triple as best you can.
Yeah. I mean, I kept hitting balls afterwards. I had about an hour and a half, but I kept intermittently hitting. And it was actually kind of funny because this lady was there from Duca del Cosma, the like shoes that I wear. Yeah. She was there and she was like, can we get some pictures? I was like, sure. I was like, I need something to distract myself right now. So we went to the range and basically had like a photo shoot on the range of this Monday qualifier course. I was like changing shoes, changing clothes. It was like all these people were there hitting balls, like kind of looking at me. But it was, she was like, this is weird that we're doing this like right here. I was like, yeah, this is actually perfect. I need this right now. you don't understand what just happened and I need to distract my mind right now. Yeah. I looked from the get-go like I was going to be in a playoff. Just like who is behind me, what they did after 9 holes. I was like, we're going to be in a playoff. I thought it might have been a little bit better than it ended up being, but I kept hitting. I didn't eat because I was really like, I was feeling really good and I didn't want to change the feel. Like sometimes you go eat lunch and it's like, yeah, I come back out and the feels are different. So, I kept the edge and then, yeah, the playoff, I just hit 2 really great shots, hit a perfect 3-wood and then knocked down the stick and kind of like spun it back to about 4 feet. And then Flavin, Pat Flavin hit it to maybe 8 or 9 feet, and then missed it right before me, and I made it. But it was cool to play with Miles. Miles, the 15-year-old, because I played with him a bunch in Atlantic Beach. Mm-hmm. And Miles is an awesome kid and really a good player. And so it was, I mean, it was fun to play with him there. And he's a great competitor too. Like, this kid is not, shying away from the moment in any way. So it was just fun to play with him too.
Evan, I mean, you've won on the Korn Ferry Tour. You've had status on the Korn Ferry Tour for still do like 12 years of being a pro for this, you know, obviously you want to get there full time, but for this moment, like what is that? What was that moment like? Can you describe to people who will, like myself, who will never be in that position?
Yeah. I mean, it was, so many years playing, so many lessons and tournaments and near misses. I mean, I've been in two playoffs before. So many, like, not quite triple bogey on 17 status, but in its own way, even worse, to miss at some other Mondays. And, I was at Torrey Pines one year. It was at Bear Creek, the Monday qualifier there. I was sitting in the fairway. It was either 18 or 9, the par 5. Hit a monster drive. I had like a 6-iron into this par 5 and didn't know it at the time, but like I hit it on the green and 2-putt and I'm medalist, and make par. I mean, it's like a pretty inviting second shot to make par, and I'm in clean, and it ended up like just ditzing around and making bogey and being in a playoff and missing in that playoff. But I did kind of like, I drew on a lot of these experiences, some other playoffs and just kind of knowing what I want to feel, and like knowing that you got to go out there and grab it in these things. And just keeping the mindset, like, this is going to happen. I believe in myself. I believe in what I'm doing.
Luke, when you guys got down there, do you guys, like, so I caddied for Mark Baldwin. Like, you know, we were at the AT&T prior to it being a signature event, weaker field. We had the conversation of like, hey, this is a huge opportunity. You know, in this case, you guys were at an opposite field event. Do you have those conversations, or do you just block it out and try to keep it as normal as possible?
I mean, it's, you know, Evan's the veteran here, so to speak. So we kind of had a conversation when we got down there. You know, the standard typical, you know, I told Evan, you know, you're supposed to be here. You belong here. This is right where we want to be. And, of course, I think you know the magnitude. Both of us do. He certainly does. But there kind of came a point where it was kind of the first time Evan looked at me, first couple holes, little tight. I think Evan would agree. We were just a little tight, first big tour event. And he looked at me and he goes, hey, you know, this is what I need. I don't really need you to hype me up right now. I need this, this, and this. And it was kind of the first time we had an interaction where, you know, let's not really talk about golf anymore. You know, we can say, you know, that was a great shot. We can enjoy the moment. But I think Evan really works well when he's not thinking about, let's say, the shot at hand or the shot that happened. And that was really big for me and kind of helped me settle in. Hearing him for the first time tell me, hey, I don't want this and you're doing it right now. So let's stop it and move forward to what, you know, I want and how we can work well. And I think it was definitely after the fact, it hit me personally, knowing how big of a moment this was for Evan. And it was definitely on cloud nine there for a little bit.
Evan, is it hard to like, just think, you have to go into that event, I assume, thinking that you belong there, and you, despite the odds of a Monday qualifier winning, like, you have to believe. Is that the hardest part of it, to believe that you can and you can compete out there?
No, I mean, that part's not hard at all. I mean, that's just how I feel. I mean, I've played with these guys, especially in that field. I mean, I haven't played against Rory and JT and the top guys. I haven't teed it up with those guys, really. But like 90% of the guys in Puerto Rico there, I mean, I've played with them for the last 12 years. Through many tours, through Latin America, Canada, Corn Ferry Tour. And I mean, I know I stack up well against those guys. I've played with them for so long and I've beat them. And like Luke said there, I mean, I think the hardest part has always like been trying to figure out what's going on in my head and what like is the environment where I can perform the best. And it really kind of crystallized there early on. And it comes down to like, hey, and what I was trying to communicate to Luke was like, hey, let's enjoy this. And for me to enjoy this, it's like, we have our decision-making time and my shot time. And the rest of the time, like, I want to enjoy it. I want to talk about other stuff. Like me, dissecting a shim, playing Monday morning quarterback on the shot, or like thinking about where my ball might be or what we're going to do on the next hole. It's like all these things are just, they're stressors. And, I want to enjoy it and talk about football and talk about other stuff. And that has always been the hardest part for me. And Luke and I have been kind of working on that. He's helped me to kind of, I mean, I've never had this kind of clarity. And then early on, I was like, wow, I'm like, I am tight. Like my hands are a little tingly kind of thing. Like, and you kind of feel it when, luckily I recognized it early on and I was like, hey, like this isn't working. So we gotta change something now. Like we don't have time to just like ride this out, you know? I'm a firm believer in, and with my swing, with anything that's going on, like once, okay, if something happens twice, then it's like you make an adjustment right then. I remember hearing Jack, he was getting interviewed at the Masters one year, and Jack was all about, he would make swing adjustments, feel adjustments on the fly in rounds. Kind of like I said, like he would change it immediately. If he knew it wasn't working, he's not riding that out. It's like, you got to go to something else. And so that applies to the swing or what you're doing in the process. Luke did awesome with that the rest of the time. I mean, about like, hey, there's a time to like manage what's going on in my dome and then manage the shot. When we get up there, it's like, okay, what's the number? What's the wind? What's the situation here?
So guys, you make the cut, you play well on Saturday, kind of put yourself in a position again, back Luke to the kind of the same question I had before, but in this case about top tens, obviously the win is out of the question at that point. You have to start at least considering top 10 strategy and all of those things. So do you guys have conversations about it that night, or do you just kind of try to keep it as normal as possible?
You know, it's funny. I don't really think we talked about, you know, like what exactly we needed. I did. I mean, you know, I had friends call me the night before and, you know, asked me, what do you think it needed done? And I said, you know, we were at 10 at the time going into the final round. I said, I think if we get 5 again, we at least have a shot getting into 15. And I don't really think, correct me if I'm wrong, E, but I don't think we had a conversation about that. It was just kind of, let's stay on course. We've improved each round. We've gone from 2 under to 3 under to 5 under. So we're trending in the right direction. And I don't really think that's what Evan needed to hear, was me say, hey, we need 5 today. All right, let's go play now. Like, that was just kind of something I don't really think we talked about. I didn't really want to say to him, because I had actually mentioned the scoreboard in the third round before the restart. And he looked at me and he goes, I don't want to talk about the scoreboard right now. And I said, you got it. Not talking about it again. So, you know, before the final round, I had a number in my brain that I thought, okay, if we can get 5, we'll at least have a shot. And sure enough, the guy in classic Evan fashion with two holes left goes birdie, birdie. And it was amazing. You know, it was just one of those things where, all right, we got five. Let's hold on and see what happens. And that was a pretty wild couple of hours after that, sprinting over to the 18th green to see if Matty Schmid is going to make that birdie putt or not.
Evan, did you know your putt on 18 was for any chance for it to be a top 10? Players have a sense of where the cut is, where top 10 is going to be. I know it's a little harder. Top 10 is some variance, especially you guys were relatively early, but did you have a sense that was to give you any sort of chance?
Yeah, I did. I looked at a scoreboard after 16, after the par three. And I mean, the whole time I like knowing where I'm at, but I definitely don't want to dwell on those things. I mean, mm-hmm. generally kind of like result oriented thinking doesn't work for me. I mean, some people work differently than others, but if there's like a focus on, hey, we need five. And it's like, okay, well, I have a drive to hit here. Like, I'm not shooting five under on this drive, you know? It's like, rarely does it work for people. There are some people that like they want a scoreboard watch all the time, and that's great. But I mean, I think that the more I can get into the process, the better. And it's like, it's not just like, oh, I'm just gonna be out there like picking daisies and wherever I fall. Like, I mean, there definitely has to be like a little bit of contact, especially coming down the stretch. But yeah, I knew. I was like, hey, if I was on 16, maybe before I hit that birdie putt on 16, I was like, this has been great, but I mean, it's time to make a couple birdies here. Mm-hmm. And that did help my focus, and in like a short period of time, that can be great in like the mm-hmm. last two holes. But if I'm like 5 hours, 18 holes, four yeah. days, it's like that's too much to kind of like put on me like of the result. But yeah, right at the end there, like for sure, I was like, okay, birdie. And I made the one on 17, and it was actually awesome playing with Aaron Baddeley. Luke can probably talk about this too, but he was awesome. I mean, just a really great guy, and he could kind of like, I made the birdie on 17, and then he kind of like paused walking off the green on 18, and we go up and start talking about like golf in Australia or something. I mean, there have been times and like moments in tournaments where guys have been like, what are you at right now? Are you at 14 under? And it's like, yeah, that's not it. You know, I mean, talking about some random course in Australia, like that's it. You know, that's just like a nice conversation to have before you go hit the 18th tee shot. Mm-hmm. So that was cool.
Yeah. When did you guys realize that kind of your place in the Valspar relied on what Matty did? Did you realize it up after his 17th, or did you realize it before that?
I realized it before that. I was sitting watching the telecast in the dining area, and I kind of went down the list of guys that were no longer could bump us, you know, in the groups behind us. And then, you know, another caddy buddy of mine looked at me and he goes, all right, you know, you got Matty Schmid left. That's the guy right now that you got to watch. And I knew before. I think probably when he was on the par 5 15th is when I knew. And I was like, okay, he's definitely got some birdies left in these holes, so let's go see what happens.
Evan, what was your were you watching the telecast? How soon did you, you know, realize what was happening?
Yeah, we were, I mean, I was hanging out there out back with Luke, and my dad was there, and a few caddies and players, and just kind of watching the action. But yeah, I think with like three holes left, when he had three holes left, it was like, okay, that's the only kind of guy out there. There might have been a guy that could eagle 18 or something like that, but yeah, we were watching it pretty closely, and I mean, he had a crazy finish.
I mean, I do want to get to that. You're not rooting ever against anyone. I understand.
Never.
That, but you might have, you wouldn't, I don't know if you can say rooting against, but you're totally fine with how it happened. But on 17,
I'd be happy to buy Matty a beer at the Valspar. Yeah. For sure.
On 17, for those that didn't watch it, Matty Schmidt very literally topped a drive off the tee. Not like a thin, like a full blown top, and then topped another 3-wood after that. Were you guys watching at the time?
Yeah, we were.
Yeah, I looked at Evan, and we were watching the telecast, so we kind of just like froze and looked at each other, and people around us were like, did he just top it? Like, where is the ball? They weren't showing the ball. You know, on TV, they always do that. We're like, if someone hits a bad shot or whatever, like they'll kind of just pan away to where they think the ball.
I mean, the cameraman is never going to think he just topped the ball.
No, and it was just
like looking for it.
I was like, oh my God, he just topped it. Like, and it was kind of a shock. Like, I think I blacked out for about 30 seconds. And then the second shot, you know, he tops again into the bunker. And I thought he was on the green putting for double. And I think part of that was my fault. I'm telling Evan, like, oh, he's putting for double. Like, he's putting for double. We're good. And right before he putts, Evan's like, this is for bogey. Like, shut up. This is not for double.
It was an amazing five. Amazing five.
And of course, he makes a 40 footer. And then right then is when I texted you, Ryan. I was like, I'm going to throw up. I'm going to throw up right now.
I mean, world class five by Matty Schmidt.
Unbelievable.
Well, Evan, I think in your defense, they had him hitting his fourth shot from the bunker on TV. And so it was like, if you just followed that, it was like, oh, he's putting for double. And then
thought the original top went into a penalty area. So like,
okay.
So no, it did. It went to the penalty area. Then
yeah.
Hit it
sorry.
In the bunker.
Yeah.
And then knocked it on.
Yeah.
But yeah, they,
okay. All right. So fifth hole, if he makes birdie, you're out. He makes par, you're in. Evan, take me to the moment. He has about a, I don't know, 10 footer, 8 footer, something like that.
Luke's like, oh, let's go over to 18. Because we didn't know if they were even going to show it. I mean, it was like,
they didn't talk about it. I put out a tweet that was like, I mean, how ridiculous. This is like as career changing as the win that's about to happen for like, and you don't have to tell the whole story. Just be like, this putt decides if Evan Harveling is going to get in. But anyway, go back to your story.
So Luke's like, oh, let's go to 18. Oh, no, he's like, I'm going. And then he just like takes off and starts running. And and then I just start running after him. And we just go, I was like, all right, we got to go up in the stands. And we thought he was like about to hit the putt. Then some woman's carrying like a huge catering tray of food coming down. We're just sitting there waiting. And then we're like, we got to go this way. We bolt around the stands. And then we're like sitting behind the scoreboard and he hit the putt. And I mean, from my angle, I was like, this thing's in. I was like, this thing looks perfect to me. But he missed it low. And we just lost it. I just like shot out of a cannon, started like sprinting, bulldozing all the volunteers over there, like weaving in between the things. And it was exciting. It was a lot of fun.
I have a really good video, Ryan, that I have a video of us running over to 18 green. And
yeah. Got to send it to me. We'll put it in the pod. Yeah.
Evan doesn't really run anymore, I don't think. So you could see that clearly. We're in a bit of a hurry jog. And running over to 18, trying to see if we got in or not. And it was unbelievable.
Evan, what's that lad like after that happens? You have to reflect on like the opportunity that's ahead, right? Like, I know you have to block that out at some point, but at that moment, you have to think like, man, I have a full points status. I've earned X amount of points. All of those scenarios. I know once you tee it up Thursday, you have to block all that stuff out. But I assume that you at least consider that.
Yeah, I mean, I consider it and try not to let it rent too much space in my mind. I mean, I know it's like once I tee it up, but it's really, I mean, I definitely took a little bit of time to be like, wow, this is awesome. This is really cool. But one of the benefits to being around for so long is that like I'm fully aware of the, of how like fleeting, these things can be. And it's like, great, had an awesome week. Great. Like, what are you doing next week? That's what it's all about. It's like, it never really stops in golf. Like you get your PGA Tour card. I haven't got it, but like you get your tour card and you're like, awesome. Wow. I made it. And then like the guys last week, it's like, well, that was their fourth start of the year in Puerto Rico out of 10 events. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it never stops. It's like, you keep playing well or you're out. That's one of the cool things about golf. I love that about golf. I enjoy that part about it. And also I'm very aware of it. So, it's really about me doing the small things each day, and staying on top of my body, staying on top of my game, and staying on top of my mind to, make sure that I'm in a good place. Luke and I are in a good place going into next week, because I'm not ready for this to be done. I mean, I have the game and we're here. And so I want to be in the best place, and that starts well before Thursday. You know, it's, that's an all day, every day thing to get yourself there.
Yeah. Well, guys, I mean, this is why my account has become a thing is weeks like this for yourself and what it can mean career wise and all of those things. So thanks for taking us inside a week that, you know, if you guys are on tour together next year, you're like, man, let's think back to, you know, two putts on 17 and 18. Obviously there's tons of shots that lead up to that, but two putts that kind of changed my career trajectory. It's exactly what I love to hear. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, what you do for the game, Ryan, is huge. So this was big.
Yeah. I'll second that as well. I mean, I think it is really cool what you do and not just cool what you do, but it's proof of the interest that there is in kind of like the underworld of golf, underworld of professional golf. It's, I mean, there's a huge amount of interest. And I mean, until you, no one had even like remotely tapped into it. And so I think you do a great job and I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you. I think the game needs to know stories like yourselves and what that is, because I think the game is getting bogged down, especially over the last 2 years, about a lot of money and a lot of people looking out for themselves. And as you know better than I do, 95% of pro golfers live in this world that you guys live in. So, I mean, thanks for telling the story. It's awesome. And 12 years and I, this proves all the time. I always say, like, people say it to Mark, and I know Mark, so I use him as an example, like, why are you still doing it? And Mark's like, because I know I can compete out there. It's just about getting out there. And so people see, like, oh, he's been a pro for 12 years. Yeah. And in his first PGA Tour event, Evan finished 10th and has a chance to change his life. So that's who's at Mondays. And there's a lot of guys who will never get that opportunity, but doesn't mean they can't compete. So I love to tell stories like this because it drives home exactly what I try to preach all the time is you have a chance to. There's plenty of players that could do what you've just done, but you did it. So congratulations, man.
Thank you.